Hi, this is Angus King, and we're talking with Brad Woodhouse, who's the executive director of a national organization called Protect Our Care, and Maine State Representative Ann Perry, who's also a nurse practitioner in rural Maine and down east Maine, about the impacts of the virus on our rural healthcare delivery system. We've seen a strain already put on these systems financially because of their preparing for the virus and cutting back on elective surgeries and other hospital admissions, which has really hurt their revenues. We've had, I know of one hospital that was within a couple of weeks of not being able to make payroll when the first round of funding from the CARES Act came through, which was based on Medicare population, which actually helped many of our hospitals because we have a high Medicare population in Maine. The next round, I understand, is going to be based to some extent on Medicaid enrollment and patient mix. That should also help us because, particularly in rural areas, we have a lot of Medicaid, we call it Maine Care, patients. The other piece is just the question of whether we have sufficient protective equipment and whether we have sufficient testing. I've been very concerned about not having an adequate testing system when we're in the process of talking about reopening the economy. If we reopen without testing, it's sort of a crapshoot in terms of not knowing where the infections are, where the hotspots are, and being able to isolate and trace people who are infected. So, and I just saw a headline this morning a few minutes ago from Dr. Fauci saying that the danger of reopening prematurely is a second spike, which would put us right back where we started and perhaps even worse. So those are some of the concerns that we're looking at. Rural health care is difficult to start with, and I should mention not only from a health care accessibility perspective, but an economic perspective. In half of our counties in Maine and 8 of our 16 counties, the hospital is the largest employer. So there's a very significant economic effect as well as access to health care. So that's some of the background of this call, and I want to ask Brad Woodhouse to talk to us a little bit about the national perspective on what's going on with the coronavirus, but also with the effect of on rural health care. Brad works with a group called Protect Our Care. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah, great. Senator, thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this call. And we are a national group, but we were founded to defend the Affordable Care Act from being repealed way back in late 2016 after Trump won the election. And we have been in Maine working on that and other health care issues ever since. So we're proud not only to be a national organization, to be part of the community there. And this is such an important call, and your leadership on this is so important. In fact, we've released a report today, a national report, Rural America in the Balance, Medicaid, Coronavirus, and Rural Hospitals. And fact is, as you've alluded to, rural Americans are especially vulnerable to this pandemic due to the higher prevalence of pre-existing conditions, lower coverage rates, and other barriers to accessing health care. And Medicaid in particular plays a pivotal role in covering rural Americas and supporting struggling rural hospitals, which are really struggling right now. You know, 10 years ago, the Affordable Care Act opened the door for states to expand the Medicaid program, which has helped an estimated 1.7 million rural Americans gain coverage. To date, 37 states have expanded Medicaid under the ACA. In addition to covering 17 million people, expansion has resulted in healthier people, healthier communities, and better economies. And as the nation faces this unprecedented healthcare crisis, Medicaid expansion is especially important for reducing uncompensated care costs and protecting rural hospitals from financial peril. Medicaid expansion is a critical part of our response to coronavirus. But, you know, President Trump is continuing to wage a war on the program by fighting to end expansion altogether through this lawsuit that would do away with the Affordable Care Act, of which Medicaid expansion is part. At the same time, by refusing to expand Medicaid, 14 states are blocking an estimated 2 to 4 million people from enrolling in affordable coverage. Senate and House Democrats have introduced legislation to incentivize these remaining states to expand their Medicaid programs by increasing federal funding to cover the full cost for the first 3 years. And this is something that absolutely needs to be done. Now, this was a fight, as Senator King and Representative Perry know, this was a fight in Maine for many, many, many years. And out of the analog of elections matter, it wasn't until Governor Mills took office and she and our champion healthcare champions there and those on this call made healthcare a priority, and Maine became the 33rd state to expand Medicaid, which now covers nearly 50,000 people in Maine.
That's 50,000. That's 50,000 additional people over and above, 50,000,
right,
who were covered before.
That's right. 50,000 additional additional people, and so I just want to emphasize, and we have a Maine version of this report, Senator King, that we'll be releasing in the next few days. But it is just a misnomer for people to think of this coronavirus pandemic as just a problem for cities and urban areas and densely populated communities. We know that this has the potential to spread, and we know that rural areas are particularly vulnerable. Rural hospitals are in deep financial problems. We've seen many, many closures of rural hospitals. Now, the fact is, we've had fewer rural hospitals close in places that have expanded Medicaid than in states that have not. And thankfully, Maine has expanded Medicaid. But I think to your other point, Senator, outside of just the rural areas and outside of this question of Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, we're not going to emerge from this until we take a real serious look, and that President Trump takes a real serious look at this question of testing. We will be flying blind if we reopen the economy in any select states or across the country without greater testing. And by the way, testing, personal protective equipment, ventilators, hospital beds are all in extremely short supply in rural America. And so this is just something that we have to focus on. We are in the middle.
Let me get Ann.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Ann, tell me about what's going on up there. I've been in touch with my old friend Jim Thompson and some people at the Callis Hospital. Tell me what you're seeing.
Well, I'm going to give a little bit of history. I think it might be helpful. When the Affordable Care Act came, was great, but unfortunately, through the with the not expanding Medicaid, a lot of the rural hospitals were picking up a lot of uncompensated care to the point where they were running in the red on a regular basis. And if you go back and look through the Maine Hospital Association, you can see most of the critical access hospitals were in the red. And the best thing that happened is that Medicaid did come in. Now it's, what, a year and a half ago? And we've seen some uptick. But what I would call happened is the perfect storm. We have two hospitals, rural hospitals, are not that far apart, who are in Chapter 11 bankruptcy because of this. Now comes the coronavirus, which means they've lost about 80% of their income. And we have two hospitals who don't have access to some of the funds that are available because they are in Chapter 11. And so now, what is going to happen with the decrease in funding and that? My concern is we may lose two hospitals in an area which would mean, in some areas, 2 hours to the next hospital.
That's the problem.
And the economic effect is twofold. First of all, it's going to cost more to be insured because of access to hospitals. We have a mill that's just in the other town. Are they going to be able to recruit and keep young engineers and families if there is no health care available? This is going to affect the economy in more ways than just the hospital workers.
Let me share some what I hope will be good news. There is another round of funding on the way from the CARES Act, which will take into account the Medicaid population in a particular hospital. That should help. And then the bill that's being negotiated, as we're literally on the phone today, I understand, is going to have some kind of special attention or set aside or something for rural hospitals in particular. On the SBA funding front, I actually had a call last week with the top administrator of the SBA in Washington, because they're saying that because the hospitals are in reorganization, they're disqualified. We've searched the law high and low, and there's no basis for that. So we're still pushing to make those hospitals eligible. There's no reason they shouldn't be in the law. So that's I can't give you any guarantees on that, but I can tell you we're really pushing right up to the very top. I think that's important, Brad, before you come back in, is this pandemic certainly started in more urban areas around Seattle and New York, but I noticed just today the two fastest growing caseloads in the country are Iowa and Nebraska. And what worries me is that rural areas have felt, you know, they haven't seen as many cases, but they may be a month behind the other areas in terms of the spread of the pandemic, and that the worst is yet to come. That's the concern that I have.
Great. So, Senator, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, and the difficulty is the rural areas are not high-income areas. We have a lot of people who are going to struggle through this. If there are jobs going away, we're really going to have a lot more problems keeping the economy up in rural areas as well. It's sort of like the domino effect.
Yep. Brad, did you want to add something?
I will just sum up on my end that in terms of, you know, rural America, I mean, obviously we have the previous bills, the CARES Act. We have the legislation that you are working on now, the interim package. There will be a COVID four, which will be a bigger package. Some people say will, you know, originate in the House. And if the president continues to refuse to use the tools that he has to help rural America and to help America in general, then certainly Congress should take a hard look at some of those issues in what might be known as COVID four, including a special enrollment period so people can get covered, incentives to expand Medicaid in the states that have yet to expand it, and so forth. And so I appreciate your leadership, both of you, but Senator King, you really showed leadership on Friday when you were getting insufficient and vague answers out of Vice President Pence and the task force, and I just wish there were more Republicans that would be willing to hold this president's feet to the fire, because it is well documented that the situation that we are in is in large measure because this president refused to prepare this country, refused to act early, refused to acknowledge this crisis, refused to use the DPA, and now we are playing catch-up on this invisible enemy. And I want to thank you for your leadership. Turn back over to you to go to reporters for questions.
Yeah, we'll go to the reporters' questions. I will say that just this morning the president is tweeting about significantly increasing the federal commitment to the testing infrastructure. So that's good news. It sounds like maybe some of the pressure from the governors and others over the weekend may have had some effect. Okay, Matthew, how are we handling reporters? Are they going to just chime in, or what? How do you want to proceed?
Whitney will conduct this.
So at this time, if there are any questions for our speakers, if you press *3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue, again, that's *3.
Hey, we must have answered all the questions.
We've got a couple coming up here. All right, our first question is going to come from Brian Seidlinger at WABI. Brian, you are live.
Hi, guys. Thank you for your time today. I was curious where, with regard to rural hospitals in Maine specifically, where are we the most behind? Is it with PPE? Is it with testing? If you could attack one thing first, where would that? What would that be?
And I'm going to let you answer that.
Well, at this point, most of the rural hospitals, at least in my area, do not have ICUs. So if somebody came in with COVID, they would probably have to be sent, if they needed it, to a tertiary hospital or a hospital that has an ICU. In terms of ventilators, most of those would require a transfer. They have ventilators that probably can be initiated and moved on that part of it. Those who have ICUs certainly have the ability for more of that stuff. And I do believe, I've been involved with Northern Light, that they have been keeping track of what's available and where people are and where the needs are and trying to just keep up on those needs. So I don't know exactly, I don't have a good answer for you on that one.
All right. Our next question is going to come from Stephen Dennis at Bloomberg News. Stephen,
Guys. Thank you for doing this call. My sort of question is about the broader impacts here on states and the potential for just a huge number of newly uninsured people either signing up for Medicaid, looking for help, they can't afford COBRA, for example. Senator King, I'm wondering if you think there's going to be a real effort and maybe a successful effort at dealing with either the state budget crunch from a massively increased Medicaid population just organically as tens of millions of people lose their jobs, or to have some kind of COBRA plus up like Senator Durbin's talking about, like was done during the Obama era. Last time we had this kind of a huge plus up in unemployed people, or is there something else that can be done to deal with something that's going to be both an individual situation that's going to affect healthcare providers if they have all these people who are uninsured suddenly showing up needing critical care, state budgets not having the money to pay for all this Medicaid, et cetera. It seems like that's just a coming tsunami in the next couple of months that might not even be showing up at the hospitals yet.
Well, the answer is you're right, and of course one of the issues that we have is the the fact that most of our people have their health insurance through their employer, and if they leave their employer, unless the employer kept the benefits intact, they can lose their coverage. COBRA can be very expensive. The CARES Act did include a big hunk of money for the states for additional expenditures incurred because of the virus, and that's going to be helpful. It's going to be helpful in terms of demands on Medicaid and demands on the state generally in terms of services. The problem is it expressly doesn't cover revenue shortfalls caused by the economic impact of the virus, and that's going to be probably the major impact. And I was hoping, frankly, that this bill that they were negotiating this weekend would include additional help for the states. As you know, all the governors, the national governors led by Republican Governor Hogan of Maryland, have requested that, and as it's not in the package, as near as I can tell. I don't know where the resistance came to that, but that's going to be a sort of secondary problem that's going to hit us in a couple of months in terms of state revenues, which are going to be crushed at the very moment that the demand for services is going to go up. So it's kind of a mixed answer. There is going to be additional money for additional expenditures, but no money to cover loss of revenues. And, of course, states can't do the kind of borrowing that the federal government can do, and they're going to either have to raise taxes or lay people off, which would be, either one would be the worst thing you could do in the middle of this pandemic. But your question is a good one. We're going to see this revenue tidal wave, or negative revenue tidal wave, probably in the next couple of months as sales taxes crash and income tax taxes, which most states depend upon, crash. Hopefully the additional funds for things like Medicaid coverage will help, but I think the revenue shortfall is going to be where the real problem is, and the question is whether the Congress and the President will step up to that part of this problem.
All right, our next question is going to come from Sheila Grant. Sheila, you are live.
Good morning, Senator. Thank you very much for this phone call. I'm wondering if you could say a few words about President Trump saying that he's had difficulties with Puritan, which is here in Piscataquis County where I work, and compelling them under the Defense Production Act. Is this a good thing for the company? Is it not a good thing? When he says he has to compel them and he's had difficulties with them, it sounds kind of negative.
Yeah, I have no idea what he's talking about, because I've been in touch with Puritan for over a month, and they have they're working 20 hours a day. The only missing 4 hours these days is time that they have to use to maintain and clean the machines. They're at the maximum of their capacity. Now, he could help them through the Defense Production Act expand their capacity, but they've stepped up. I had not heard that he was saying that they were giving him problems. They have stepped up incredibly in this situation. As I say, I first talked to their people. It's been at least a month or more than a month ago. The demand is enormous, but they've done everything they can to meet it. And I know that they're reaching out to try to expand their capacity. But you can, if a machine produces, 100,000 swabs in a day, that's what it's going to produce, assuming they're running it as fast and as intensively as they can, which I know they've been doing. So I don't understand saying they haven't done what they can do, because I know that's just not the case.
So there are maybe some.
All right, that's all the time that we have for questions today. So, Senator King, I'm going to toss it back to you for some final closing remarks.
Well, I think this is a really important area to focus on. A lot of the attention has been on New York and some of the areas that have New Orleans that have been the urban hotspots. But I think we're just beginning to see the impact in the rural areas, and it's going to be very, very serious. And these rural hospitals, health centers, practitioners, nurse practitioners, the whole healthcare field have been so heroic through all of this, literally taking risks with their own lives and well-being in order to serve the rest of us. So it's the least we can do to make sure that they have the resources and the equipment and everything that they need to protect their own health, as well as the health of all of their patients. So I think I want to just end this call with a thanks to Anne, who is a nurse practitioner, and have hope that she will convey my thanks to all of her colleagues around the state and the country, because I don't think we've ever felt the connection to our healthcare community as we have today, and those people that are really on the front lines protecting us, it means so much. So I want to end with a thanks.
Great, thank you.